Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to anyone on the internet watching us. We're glad to be together. Jesus Christ admonished his followers. He urged them to watch carefully. They came to him, and we're told in Matthew 24, they asked him about what would be the sign of his return and his coming. And he warned them about being deceived. He told them to watch. Let's turn there for just a moment here to Matthew 24, and we're going to read just a couple verses here, starting in verse 3. Matthew 24, verse 3. Now as Jesus sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you." And then skipping ahead a little bit towards the end of the chapter, verse 24. In verse 24, Jesus said, "For false Christs, false prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders, so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect." And then finally, in verses 43 through 44, Jesus said this, verse 43, "But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him." Well, his message was pretty plain to his disciples there, telling them they're not going to know when he returns, and saying they need to be. We likewise need to be prepared, and we need to be watching carefully, guarding against being deceived, being caught unprepared or unaware. And I remember hearing this quite a lot when I first came into God's church, which is now over 35 years ago. And I remember being urged to use the tools in our Christian toolbox, prayer, study, fasting, meditation, to stay close to God, because we don't want to be deceived either. We don't want to be caught unawares, taken by surprise, caught unprepared. And Jesus said, if possible, even his very elect could be deceived. We don't really like to think about that. We don't like to think that if we're solid in God's truth, if we're a good Christian, that we could be deceived. But let's ask the question today, is it possible for even a faithful, solid, and upright servant of God to be caught off guard, unaware, even after being forewarned? Well, I'm sad to say, but the answer is yes, it is. It's just like Jesus said. It is possible for us to be taken by surprise, caught unaware. And so today, that's what we're going to examine. If you're a spokesman and you want an SPS, or if you just like a title, today, this is it. Even faithful men can be caught unaware. Even faithful men can be caught unaware. And the reason, this is the reason, that Jesus urged his followers to watch, to be aware, to pray always, that they'd never be taken by surprise. So today, we are going to examine the account of one of God's faithful servants who did experience this very thing in his life. And his name is Samuel. So let's turn to the book that bears his name. Let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 1, and we're going to read quite a lot of the text about this. think we're all probably pretty well aware of the story of Samuel, but it's good to review these things. So let's begin reading 1 Samuel chapter 1 in verse 1. Now there was a certain man of Ramathan Zophim of the mountains of Ephraim. His name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuph, an Ephraimite. Why these guys couldn't have simple names like I do. Thuvanin, huh? That's about as good a joke as you're going to hear from me today. But don't worry about it. You already heard that in the sermonette. There's no reason to be anxious or worrisome. Verse 2. And this man had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, the name of the other Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. So here we've been told that Elkanah, he had two wives, and he would go to worship and sacrifice every year at Shiloh. Verse 4. Whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to his wives, to Peninnah his wife, and to all her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved her, although the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable, because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was, year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, that she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. So Hannah's, it tells us she's miserable. She's sad. Her I don't know what you call another wife, almost a sister-in-law there, but I mean the second wife is prodding her and making known the fact that she has children, but Hannah did not. So then in verse 8, we read, Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? So Hannah arose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Then she made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look upon the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head. Sounds very similar to the story of Samson with a Nazarite vow that he would not cut his hair, but that he would be dedicated to the Lord. Verse 12, and it happened as she continued praying before the Lord, Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she was drunk. So Eli said to her, How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you. And Hannah answered and said, No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him. And she said, Let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they rose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her. So it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son and called his name Samuel, saying, because I have asked for him from the Lord. And the man Elkanah and all his house went up to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up until the child is weaned. Then I will take him, that he may appear before the Lord and remain there forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Wait until you have weaned him. Only let the Lord establish his word. So the woman stayed and nursed her son until she had weaned him. Verse 24. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with three bulls, one ephah of flour, a skin of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh. And the child was young. Then they slaughtered a bull and brought the child to Eli. Continuing in verse 26. And she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I am the woman who stood by you here praying to the Lord. In other words, do you remember me? You thought I was drunk, but I said no. I was just in deep sorrow. For this child I prayed, and the Lord has granted me my petition which I asked. Therefore I also have lent him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he shall be lent to the Lord. So they worshiped the Lord there. So Hannah explains to Eli exactly what she had promised to do, and she's doing that. She is giving Samuel to Eli, for as long as he lives, he is to be lent to the Lord, and he'll be there serving under Eli. So let's skip over into chapter 2, down to verse 11. Then Elkanah went to his house at Ramah, but the child ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. So little Samuel stayed behind at the tabernacle to serve under the priest. Continuing now, let's pick up the story here in verse 18. 18. So Samuel ministered before the Lord, even as a child, wearing a linen ephod. Moreover, his mother used to make him a little robe and bring it to him year by year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. Now remember, he's just a little boy. I mean, here it's describing his clothing as a little robe that he would wear. So he's still a young child. And Eli would bless Elkanah and his wife and say, the Lord give you descendants from this woman for the loan that has been lent to the Lord. In other words, you have kept your vow, you have given your firstborn child to serve the Lord. May God bless you with many more children. Then they went back to their home. Verse 21, and the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bore three sons and two daughters. Meanwhile, the child Samuel grew before the Lord. Now, let's see here. For this, we need to go back in the verse here to 21. I'm sorry, I'm getting all twisted up here, but I'm not going to worry, so don't get anxious. We want to go back here now to verse 12 and pick up the story about the sons of Eli. In verse 12, we read, now the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. Remember, they were priests. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered a sacrifice, the priest's servant would come with a three-pronged flesh hook in his hand while the meat was boiling. Then he would thrust it into the pan or the kettle or cauldron or pot, and the priest would take off for himself all that the flesh hook brought up. So they did in Shiloh to all the Israelites who came. Also, before they burned the fat, the priest's servant would come and say to the man who sacrificed, "Give meat for roasting to the priest, for he will not take boiled meat from you, but raw." And if the man said, they should really burn the fat first, then you may take as much as your heart desires. He would then answer, "No, but you must give it to me now, and if not, I will take it by force." Therefore, the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for the men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So here we read that Eli's sons, the priests, they were bad. They were corrupt. They did not administer the sacrifice appropriately. So in verse 22, let's pick up the story with Eli. Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything that his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him?" Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father, because the Lord desired to kill them. So they wouldn't listen. They were bad boys, bad sons. They refused to change. Continuing in verse 27, "Then a man of God came to Eli and said to him, 'Thus says the Lord, did I not clearly reveal myself to the house of your father when they were in Egypt, in Pharaoh's house? Did I not choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense and to wear an ephod before me? And did I not give to the house of your father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering which I have commanded in my habitation, and honor your sons more than me, to make yourselves fat with the best of all the offerings of Israel, my people? Therefore, the Lord God of Israel says, I said indeed that your house and the house of your father would walk before me forever. But now the Lord says, far be it from me, for those who honor me, I will honor, and those who despise me shall be lightly esteemed." Well, this man pronounces bad news to Eli. He said, "You've been honoring your sons more than God." He continues, "Behold, the days are coming that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, so that there shall not be an old man in your house. And you will see an enemy in my habitation, despite all the good which God does for Israel. And there shall not be an old man in your house forever. But any of your men whom I do not cut off from my altar shall consume your eyes and grieve your heart, and all the descendants of your house shall die in the flower of their age." Now notice verse 34. "Now this shall be a sign to you that will come upon your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them." Well, God has pronounced judgment upon them. That's what Eli is told is going to happen to his sons. Well, let's move over now to chapter 3. In verse 1, we start to learn a little more about Samuel as he's growing, not just physically, but in knowledge about God and in service to him. In chapter 3, verse 1, "Then the boy Samuel ministered to the Lord before Eli. The word of the Lord was rare in those days, and there was no widespread revelation. It came to pass at that time, while Eli was lying down in his place, and when his eyes had begun to grow so dim that he could not see, before the lamp of God went out in the tabernacle of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and while Samuel was lying down to sleep, so it's bedtime, the Lord called Samuel, and he answered, "Here I am." So he ran to Eli and called, "Here I am, for you called me." And Eli said, "I did not call you. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. And the Lord called yet again, "Samuel." So Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." And Eli answered, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor was the word of the Lord yet revealed to him. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time. Then Samuel arose and went to Eli, saying, "Here I am, for you did call me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord had called the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go lie down, and it shall be, if he calls you, that you must say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. Then the Lord came and stood and called as at the other times, saying, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel answered, "Speak, for your servant hears." Then the Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house, from beginning to end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. Therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever." So Samuel lay down until morning, and he opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and Samuel was afraid to tell Eli the vision. He probably didn't want to go to his boss and say, "I've got bad news." Well, I think we all would have been trembling. Remember, he was still a young child. So in verse 16, Eli called Samuel and said, "Samuel, my son." And he answered, "Here I am." And Eli said, "What is the thing that the Lord has said to you? Please do not hide it from me. God do so to you and more also, if you hide anything from me of all the things that he has said to you." You know, when I read this passage, I had to laugh to myself a little bit, because I'm reminded of something my sister told me years ago. She had an older friend. Her name was Joyce. And Joyce was telling about an experience she and her brother and some area children from the neighborhood had. They went smoking in the shed out behind the house. Well, Joyce's mother found them there. She sent her own children into the house immediately. But as they left, they heard her instructing these other children that were there, boys and girls from the neighborhood, scolding them, saying, "You go home right now, and you tell your mothers what you've been doing." And my sister laughed and said to her friend Joyce, "Oh, like they're really going to go home and tell their mom. Do you honestly believe that they would go home and tell their moms?" And Joyce said, "Oh, they did. They did." She said, "You don't know my mother. She was powerful." Well, that was another attempt to make you laugh there a little bit, but I'm going to give up on that. But the point was here, Eli, he took the high road on that, and he insisted that Samuel tell him the truth. He said, "Don't you sugarcoat it. You tell me everything." So in verse 18, we read, "Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him." And Eli said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seems good to him." And finally, in verse 19, "So Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fall to the ground. And all Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that Samuel had been established as a prophet of the Lord. Then the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Well, we know what God said to Samuel. And Samuel tells Eli what's going to happen. And this is just a reminder of what the man of God had shared with Eli some time before. But meanwhile, we read that Samuel is becoming widely known and recognized as a prophet, someone that has God's word. So let's continue now in 1 Samuel chapter 4. In verse 1, the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Israel went out to battle against the Philistines and encamped beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines encamped in Aphek. Then the Philistines put themselves in battle array against Israel, and when they joined battle, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who killed about 4,000 men of the army in the field. And when the people had come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Why has the Lord defeated us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from Shiloh to us, that when it comes among us, it may save us from the hand of our enemies." So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from there the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, who dwells between the cherubim. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. So Israel has gone to battle against the Philistines. It's not going well. Thousands have already fallen. And so Hophni and Phinehas bring the Ark of the Covenant there. Well, let's skip ahead here. Verse 10, let's pick up the story. So the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated, and every man fled to his tent. There was a very great slaughter, and there fell of Israel 30,000 foot soldiers, and the Ark of God was captured. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. So Israel was defeated. The sons of Eli were both killed, as had been told him in advance. And thousands of Israelites fell. Verse 12. Then a man of Benjamin came from the battle line that same day, came to Shiloh with his clothes torn and dirt upon his head. Now when he came, there was Eli sitting on a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the Ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. When Eli heard the noise of the outcry, he said, "What does the sound of this tumult mean?" And the man came hastily and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old. His eyes were so dim that he could not see. Then the man said to Eli, "I am he who came from the battle. I fled today from the battle line." And Eli said, "What happened there, my son?" So the messenger answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines. There has been a great slaughter among the people. Also, your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been captured." Then it happened, when he made mention of the Ark of God, that Eli fell off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken, and he died, for the man was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So Eli falls over, breaks his neck, and he dies. Bad news. bad news, but not really a surprise when he heard it. Should it have been? Let's recap a moment what we have seen so far. Samuel came as an answer to Hannah's prayer, and she agreed to lend him to the Lord, to allow him to serve the Lord. And from a young age, Samuel served under Eli, the priest, in the tabernacle for all his life. That's all that he would have known. Remember, she took him there when he was just a little boy. And then that man of God came to Eli and told him his son's bad behavior would not be tolerated indefinitely. And Samuel should have done something about it. Not Samuel, I'm sorry, Eli. But he hadn't. So God calls to Samuel in the night, and he gives him the word, Eli's house is going to be punished. Both his sons would be killed. And that's exactly what happened in the battle with the Philistines. Meanwhile, Samuel is becoming recognized as a prophet in Israel, and none of his words fall to the ground. Well, against this backdrop, let's move forward here a couple more chapters. In the next few chapters, we read about ongoing conflicts between the Philistines and the Israelites. But finally, there comes a time of peace. Let's read in starting in verse 13 of chapter 7. Chapter 7, verse 13. So the Philistines were subdued, and they did not come any more into the territory of Israel. The hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. Then the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel, from Ekron to Gath, and the Israelites recovered the territory from the hands of the Philistines. Also, there was peace between Israel and the Amorites. Then we read in verse 15, so Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. Because time has passed now. Decades have passed. And Samuel continues as he had as a child. He's serving God. Verse 16, Samuel went from year to year on a circuit to Bethel, Gilgad, and Mizpah, and judged Israel in all those places. But he always returned to Ramah, for his home was there. There he judged Israel, and there he built an altar to the Lord. Now in chapter 8, let's read verse 1. Now it came to pass, when Samuel was old, that he made his sons judges over Israel. We're told he's old. He's not a little boy now anymore. I mean, that's years behind, years in the rearview mirror. He's old now, and he has been judging Israel all his life. So he makes his sons judges. Verse 2, the name of his firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second, Abijah, and they were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. Then all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah. And they said to him, look, you are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make for us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. So Samuel prayed to the Lord. Wow, what a turn of events here. Samuel has appointed his two sons to be judges under him. But they're not good. They're not good boys. They're not good judges. And the people know it. They see it. And they ask instead for a king. What are the two reasons they list for giving us a king? Well, in verse 5, they told Samuel, you're old. In other words, you're good. We like you. We can count on you. We trust you. We know that you do God's will. But your sons aren't like you. And you're not going to be here forever. You're old. And the second thing, he said, your sons are not good judges. We're not happy with them judging us because they're not honest. They do bad things. Well, obviously, Samuel was displeased. And obviously, this was not what he had anticipated when he made his sons to be judges after him. He was very displeased. And of course, in the chapters that follow, we know that God told Samuel, the people have not rejected you, they've rejected me. Give them a king. And God raised up Saul as the first king. And you know, after Saul showed his true colors, that he was not a man after God's heart, God raised up David instead. Samuel was right through all of that. He's the one who anointed David among his brothers to be the king after Saul. Samuel was right through all of these things. He had done these things. He had experienced these things firsthand. But consider for a moment what happened with his sons. Consider Samuel's firsthand experience with Eli and his two sons. Remember, Samuel was still a youth when God had called him in the night and revealed God's pronouncement of guilt upon Eli and his sons. That was his first direct encounter with God. That was the first time that he had a direct interaction with God. Surely that made a lasting impression. Think of it. Samuel was just a young boy then. And God spoke to him. God told him these things. Told him, Eli has bad sons. They don't do what their father has taught them. They don't honor me. I'm going to remove them. Yet when Samuel appointed his own two sons as judges, apparently it never occurred to him that, in fact, this situation could end up being very much like Eli's situation. Brethren, no one can ever know for certain how someone else will act or react in any given situation. We can't be sure of that. And we know that only God knows the heart. But can you honestly think of anyone else in the Bible who had a closer, more direct, firsthand experience with a situation like this, where a man of God, Eli, had his two sons beneath him, supposedly serving in godly roles, but who just went completely bad? And yet Samuel, despite seeing that firsthand, it didn't stop him at all from setting his sons up to be judges after him. Clearly, he didn't expect things to turn out as they are. Yet sadly, their performance was very much a copycat of Eli's sons' actions. Now, I don't want anyone to think for a moment that I am even slightly suggesting that Samuel was anything less than a righteous and honorable man. Notice what God says about Samuel to Jeremiah. Let's turn over to Jeremiah 15. Let's see, Jeremiah was here this morning. I'm sure he still is. Jeremiah 15, verse 1. God says to Jeremiah, then the Lord said to me, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, yet my mind could not be favorable toward this people. Here God's lamenting Judah's sinful behavior. But God heralds Samuel, along with Moses, as someone who possibly might have been able to persuade him to mercy. Samuel was clearly a righteous servant of God with whom God was well pleased. Let's turn back to Deuteronomy chapter 34 and let's notice something about Moses, the other one listed here. Moses 34, verse 10. In Moses 34, verse 10, we read, "But since then there has not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." And let's go forward here to Hebrews chapter 11, and we're going to read a verse here from the faith chapter, Hebrews 11, verse 32. Verse 32, Hebrews 11, "What more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak, and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets." Clearly, Samuel, along with Moses, is someone that God held up as a good example. So by no means do I want anyone to think that I'm saying that Samuel, he was a poor example. No. God heralded him as a good example, someone we could emulate. But the point for us today is simply this. Even someone who is righteous, someone who is faithful, someone who serves God faithfully can, in fact, sometimes be caught unaware. If anyone should have seen from a young age that a righteous man's sons will not necessarily follow their father's example, it should have been Samuel. And yet apparently, this did not dissuade him from placing his two sons in positions which would require them to follow their father's righteous example, which they did not. Brethren, we began today with a reminder to guard against deception, to be watchful, to be alert, to not be caught unaware or off guard. And we've seen today that, in fact, it is possible for even a righteous man, a faithful man, an obedient servant of God to sometimes be caught unaware. Jesus warned that in the end times, some will seek to deceive, if possible, even the elect. So the message to all of us is to vigilantly guard against deception, stay close to God, pray always for God to safeguard us from deception so that we'll never be caught unaware, unprepared, blindsided. Because as we've been reminded today, even faithful men can sometimes be caught unaware.